I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, welcome to Kernels. This is episode 10. I'm Christopher Eaton and I'm here with my colleagues Jacob Stallworthy and Jack Shepherd.
Hello.
Hello.
So it's no secret that studios have been having a rough time the last couple of years, I think it's fair to say. Like, there's obviously been some big successes, but then a lot of flops that probably outnumber them. And just the last week or two, the conversation has turned to Rotten Tomatoes, particularly in light of, I think, The Mummy and Baywatch, which both bombed, and now Rotten Tomatoes' negative score has been kind of attributed to it, even though I think if it had asked anyone on our desk whether a Mummy film would have worked, we could have told Universal that in seconds.
Quite clear, yeah.
But, yeah, it's got to the point now where, I mean, it becomes like an actual headline in itself. It's kind of gone full circle, whereas obviously the headlines influence, you know, go directly into Rotten Tomatoes, but now, you know, it comes around again and people actually write, you know, I'm sure we've written a story that's been like, it gets, you know, a perfect 100% rating on
completely,
Rotten Tomatoes,
yeah.
Or has got a 10%, you know, the lowest for this kind of film.
Yeah.
So it does seem to have a big influence, to the point where these like beleaguered studios are now trying to blame it on it. There was a piece in Vanity Fair. They got hold of an independent study that was commissioned by 20th Century Fox in 2015 called Rotten Tomatoes in the Box Office. And the conclusion to the study was the power of Rotten Tomatoes and fast-breaking word of mouth will only get stronger. Many millennials and even Gen Xers now vet every single purchase through the internet, whether it's restaurants, video games, makeup, consumer electronics, or movies. As they get older and comprise an even larger share of total moviegoers, this behavior is unlikely to change. So, I mean, full disclosure, we're on Rotten Tomatoes. Our work is on there.
Yeah.
But we don't exactly rely on it as for a huge portion of our traffic. So yeah. I don't feel
we don't
like
write
too...
it in the hope. Oh, it's going to go on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I don't feel hugely biased. But I guess to start with, I mean, obviously our experience of it is atypical because we come at it from the side of a critic, but how do you guys use it if you do? And if you do, when do you? And for which kind of films?
I use it for most films, especially when you think about buying a cinema ticket, which is 15 quid, sometimes more, especially when you're going to IMAX screenings. You don't want to spend that on something that isn't going to be... of good.
Yeah, if you've got the opportunity to improve that choice, then
exactly.
You may as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, you don't expect, you know, it is a commitment, so you want to check that. And I think it's a good thing, mainly, but the problem is that it is just a... it's good, it's bad.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get into the binary thing, yeah.
Yeah, but, I use it less than Jack. I think I used it more years ago, really. Now I use... like Letterboxd way more. I think it's more I think people it doesn't just champion the critics, it champions the cinema goer, the casual cinema goer.
How does Letterboxd work for like people who don't use it?
So it's basically it's a diary of the films you've watched. So if you watch a film, you can note down, you don't have to put note down when you watch it, but it's quite nice to kind of keep track of when you've watched things. And you can go on, you can rate it out of 5, you can write your review, you can make lists, you know, of any films you've seen this year, and you can order it. So at the end of the year, if you want to do your end of year list, you can go back and just, it's very easy to just remember what you've seen and how much you liked it. And it's very much not just black or white. It's a place to go to where you can actually get a real kind of measured response to a film.
Oh, and you look at critics who you respect and you tell me.
I mean, you can do all your friends or
okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and because a lot of people are using it, it's not it's kind of worth it. I suppose Rotten Tomatoes or Flixster in a day, you know, not a lot of people ever really used it, so you couldn't really get a sense of what was a good film or what wasn't a good film.
Yeah.
So for me, Rotten Tomatoes, yeah, I don't really use it as much. I'm not sure I like the idea of Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah.
I think I don't really use it for going to the cinema particularly, but I do use it for VOD stuff.
Yeah.
I guess just because you're in the browser anyway to watch the film, all you've got to do is open up another one and check.
Yeah.
And I also think I use it for crappier films, maybe.
Yeah,
I think maybe I subconsciously, if it's like a kind of a more out there film, I think I don't need to know a consensus for this, because I know it's going to be all over the place and I need to make my own mind up.
Sure.
Whereas if I'm just like, I need to watch a crappy action film right now that's just going to get me through the day,
yeah,
I'll probably check it because I just want to know that it's generally good.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, so I mean, so the whole, like, this allegation from the studio is that it's killing their movies. Do you think increased review exposure, like, I mean, obviously not increased reviews, they're still broadly the same amount they used to be, but the fact that people are exposed to them more now, that it is having an impact? I mean, I guess it is.
I think it is having an impact. I think it has actually more impact than people are led to believe, to be honest. I think, like you both touched on, cinema prices are just ridiculous. I mean, yeah, we are in a privileged position. I mean, I think critics do forget that they don't pay to go to the cinema. Yeah. They really don't. And that for some people, they really will look to a critic, whether they seek a critic out or whether they just Google the name of a film and just go to the first review they find, they will listen to what is written. So I think if there's increased review exposure, I think it is going to have an impact.
It's interesting, actually, going on a tangent slightly, because I think a few years ago people were talking about how film criticism was dying, because you know now anyone and everyone, rightly so, has an opinion about a film and shares about it on. They were saying, you know, what does it matter if a critic says this? They're just another person.
Yeah.
But actually, it's like it's come round again now, yeah, to with all these aggregators, and where it means everything. And if the embargo drops on the day and all these bad reviews come out, it like kills it.
Yeah,
it does. Interesting.
Well, I think it's the way everyone talks about fake news all the time, and so people are going to more prestigious news websites. People are now going to more prestigious critics because everyone does have an opinion, and seeing so many reactions on social media, you kind of just want someone who you know has a quality viewpoint and has and knows how to compare it to other films, yeah, and will come at it from perhaps a non-biased perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to places like Rotten Tomatoes, which are verified critics. I think the only problem there is that there are Rotten Tomatoes does include some really kind of like rogue blogs.
That's true.
Quite sketchy.
Yeah. Mm.
I think Metacritic is actually a bit more selective in who they use. But yeah, Rotten Tomatoes is kind of... I sometimes get like really in the weeds of Rotten Tomatoes, like going through the reviews, and you end up on some like bizarre, like really small town Christian blog, and there's like their thoughts on like Transformers or something. It's like, yeah.
That's crazy to me, because I don't use Rotten Tomatoes in it so much that I would have known that. That's crazy. So literally, to anyone who writes a review, they'll just be like, yeah, put it on.
I mean, they do have like a list, but their list is... I guess not very too, so difficult to get onto. Yeah. Like, I don't
could
know.
Do with a little
could do with some curation
amendment. Yeah.
So to kind of give like in terms of like breaking down whether it's actually a good thing or not that this is happening to films, kind of two very contrasting opinions here. So Brett Ratner, the Batman vs Superman producer, described Rotten Tomatoes as the worst thing that we have in today's movie culture. I mean, he's obviously a little bit biased coming from Superman. He didn't get a great response, but he carried on. He said, I have such respect and admiration for film criticism. When I was growing up, film criticism was a real art, and there was intellect that went into it. And you would read Pauline Kael's reviews or some others, and that just doesn't exist anymore. Now it's about a compounded number of how many positives versus negatives. Now it's about what's your Rotten Tomatoes score. That's sad, because the Rotten Tomatoes score was so low on Batman vs Superman, I think it put a cloud over a movie that was incredibly successful. But, I mean, well, for starters, I don't know why he thinks that anyone going to see Batman vs Superman would have been interested to read a Pauline Kael review.
Well, that's a point. That's a very good
like,
point.
Yeah, who's this like kind of cinema guy he's imagining like that would be doing that instead? They would never seek that out. It's not like that's the option.
Mm.
But then, I mean, yeah.
I mean, I think the thing is that it does come down to who the cinema goer is. And I think if you are like someone who would read a Pauline Kael review or would even know who that is, you're probably not going to go on Rotten Tomatoes and check what the score is, see whether it's rotten, certified, fresh, or whatever. I mean, largely you're not going to. You're going to know that it's a certain director and that you want to see that film regardless, right?
I think people are becoming more aware of things like Rotten Tomatoes, and I think this is why producers are so scared of it, because a lot more people who aren't as interested in films are going on to those sort of sites because it's so easy to.
But that's what I was going to say. On the flip side, there are those people, the casual cinema goers, who probably would, and they're probably so set in their ways that they've done it forever and they probably will do it forever more.
Yeah.
Which makes it dangerous. And if more people are doing that, I mean, the internet's only getting bigger, yeah, then I guess it makes sense for studios to put Rotten Tomatoes scores on posters or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, they are doing that more. I mean, yeah, you see, you know, like there was that film Hunt for the Wilder People, which they were promoting as 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah, and yeah, they kept throwing that down our throats, that it's 100%, it's the best movie.
Funny, yeah.
And it's, well, it's, you know, it's not a 100% movie, but it is a good film.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, obviously, it appeals to the...
And it could eventually do damage to the film, yeah, no? Like, people would, yeah, go expecting this all-timer, and then they... And I'm, yeah, yeah, having, yeah, a little bit, I'm not saying it's not bad, it's a great film.
Although it's more, at least that's more transparent than how they've been using pull quotes on posters, which I don't know if everyone realizes how fucked up that process is.
Like, what are you like referring, yeah, to in particular?
So, like, for listeners who don't know, every single billboard that you go past and every poster where it says, you know, 5-star, the Daily Mail says, fantastic, stunning, or whatever,
yeah,
that's not direct quote from the, mm-hmm, review. You won't find that. That's literally just the reaction, yeah, that, from a screening,
yeah,
which is quite unbelievable, and, yeah, I think it's, yeah, very open to abuse in the way that you often walk past them, you're like, who said that? That's, yeah, that's not like a stunning film. And then it was just, they said that to, you know, whoever was marketing the film. They didn't actually put that down in their review, which,
yeah,
it's quite
and stunning. They might have written it in the hope of being on the poster, but, yeah, it's still very, it's quite dishonest, I guess, in many respects. What I started, like, when they started doing the whole on posters, I think they reserve it for kind of like comedy, like kind of rubbishy comedy films, where they just go, you know, it was really funny, and then I leave just like Sally from Wigan.
Yeah, like, I love it.
They just started doing like Twitter profiles, yeah, as, yeah, well. Like, this person said this,
and it's, and it, in a way, it is like, what? But I suppose if they're going to put Rotten Tomatoes scores on there, they are. I don't know. They've probably been invited to like a fan screening where they've got free tickets. They're probably more inclined to be like, it was so, it was such a fun thrill ride or whatever.
Yeah. It's like they vox popped people outside the cinema, yeah, and just gone, what did you think? Oh my God, you loved it. Let's put this on the poster.
I love it. Paul from Birmingham. I do care what Paul from Birmingham thinks, you know.
But again, I think that's why people are going to Rotten Tomatoes, to look for what, yeah, the critics have actually said.
Yeah.
Instead, yeah, of relying, fun, on,
yeah, Graham from Gloucester.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then, so, yeah, so the other, so we had Brett Ratner obviously being incredibly critical about it. Another film, Vanity Fair, cited a marketing executive, an independent film distributor, said simply, to me, it's a ridiculous argument that Rotten Tomatoes is the problem. Fuck you, make a good movie.
I mean,
which is also a very valid, yeah, opinion. But
I mean, yeah, you want to shout that to a half director in Hollywood, I guess.
Yeah.
Fair play. I think, like, the thing with criticism in general is, like, I think you can kind of, every now and then a film does come along where you expect to get good reviews and it doesn't, but most of the time you can probably predict the way it's going to go by what kind of film it is and who's in it and who's directed it or whatever. And I think there's more isolated instances of films not getting the love they deserve, like on Rotten Tomatoes, than the other way around, like films getting, you know, high, yeah, praise when it doesn't deserve it. I think the films that deserve the praise will get the praise, but then there are some films who really deserve the praise and could do with the praise,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
don't. And that, for that reason, I don't like love Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I can see the issue there, because like something like Suicide Squad or Batman vs Superman isn't kind of going to be actually affected, because people are going to go and see it anyway, just because it's such a huge event.
Yeah.
Or if anything, is they're going to go and see it for the spectacle of seeing this movie that everyone thought was going to be great and is now apparently terrible.
Yeah.
So that's why those films continue to do well. Then you get ones that are like weaker franchises, I guess, like The Mummy, that struggle when that happens. But then, yeah, the real casualties, like you say, are films that you champion and you feel strongly, yeah, about, and then you see it's like a 40%. And
yeah,
that's definitely happened to me a couple of times. That Terrence Malick film, Song to Song. I came out and gave it a 5-star review. A load of people gave it 1. And now everyone has already made up their mind. They're like, oh, Malick's latest pretentious load of, like, yeah, wankery. And it's like, oh, no one's going to watch it now because of that, which is a shame. And you said you had a similar thing with the film you saw this week, right?
Okay, so there's a film called It Comes at Night, which is this, well, it's being billed as a horror when it's actually a psychological thriller. And it's from this guy called Trey Edward Schultz, who's just done a short film before called Krisha. And I saw the film last week before interviewing him, and I didn't love it. I was expecting it to be something else completely different to what it was, which isn't what was bad about it. There's a lot of other things I'm going to go into now that I didn't love about it. One of which was I thought it was a really botched, rushed ending, kind of bleak for the sake of being bleak. because I love a bleak ending, but this one I just didn't feel like it was justified. And I interviewed him this morning, the director, and I just wanted to kind of just speak to him and see if I could get an understanding of, you know, where I didn't watching the film. And he actually, without me saying anything, he cited quite a few reviews and about that had highlighted how bleak and out of nowhere and pointless the ending was. And he was really upset about it, and he kind of described to me his motivations behind it. And now I've come away and I'm in a bit of a catch 22 because I'm going to review this film, and having seen the film, do I write about what I thought initially, or do I take into account what he wanted? Yeah. You know, it's really hard. And I think with these reviews, with the Rotten Tomatoes reviews where they take snapshots of a review, some can be quite misrepresentative.
Yeah, some really tend to go for the most venomous one or the most, right, like, extolling kind of film.
Yeah, like, for example, Cars 3, which came out in the States last week, and there was a lot of chat about all the reviews, and on Rotten Tomatoes, it was pretty much all male critics, and then there was one female voice, I think it was for Entertainment Weekly. And if you just looked at it at one glance, you'd think she really loved the film. When you actually click on and you read the review, she didn't love the film at all. She just kind of wrote one positive thing, and they've pulled it out and kind of said, yep, yeah, this, and said for this lady, she loved this film, but she didn't. And I think she expressed that on Twitter. She's like, I just wanted to point out, I didn't love this film.
I think another example would be something like King Arthur, which I know has a really low Rotten Tomatoes score, but lots of people have come out of that film really enjoying it.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of seems, I haven't actually seen it, but it looks like a very down the middle kind of 3-star-ish film.
Yeah.
That's what my brother said anyway. And it's kind of, you lose that with Rotten Tomatoes. You don't have those middle of the road films anymore. It's either certified fresh, really good, or it's like rotten and it's bad. There's no kind of middle ground which anyone kind of talks about, and if it is somewhere in there, it will just lose it. Like, yeah, no one will go see it anymore.
And the reason you're getting that as well is this, same with Cars 3, it's like even more obvious than the lack of women in that list is there's no like 10-year-old boys in it, and that's like, that's what matters. You've got all these like middle-aged people saying about what their views are on Cars 3, and it's like, and I get that, like,
good point.
Honestly, it gives me a heart attack having to try and review a kid's film because I can't it's so difficult to try and judge it as just for what it is.
Yeah.
And you can obviously still try to and still say, you know, it's easy to say, and you can look at films like Up and you can say that is objectively a really good kids film. But it's also for the ones that are a little bit lighter, it's hard to not, you just want to, you are bored and you want to hate them, but you're like, a kid is probably going to love this. Like,
yeah.
I remember like XXX, the Vin Diesel film, the first one, came out when I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. He was like jumping off a bridge in a Ferrari. I was like, this is awesome. And as a film going experience, my 12-year-old self, that was great. I'd watch it now and be like, this, the latest, oh, it's just guns and cars. Yeah. Like,
it is hard. I think...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Also, like, I mean, like, how long until, like you said, like the bad, like King Arthur, it's kind of, it's carried around if it's not seen as a good film on Rotten Tomatoes. It kind of carries that tag around like a bad stench, really. And then you just won't watch it because of that. And then you might watch it down the line and be like, this was all right, I don't understand. But like, I did a little bit of digging and we're back on Rotten Tomatoes, and there were just two films that really stood out to me that now, if you look on Rotten Tomatoes, are seen as not good films, like with quite bad scores.
Certified rotten.
Certified rotten. one of which is, well, I'll start with the one I'm most angry about. It's flipping Austin Powers 2, The Spy Who Shagged Me, which I just want to say is one of my the best sequel, I think, of all time. Really, I do think that. If only I was a critic back in 99, seriously. But if you look on there, it's 51%, and it's got that green logo, which suggests it's bad. Yeah. Austin Powers 2, which is one of the, you know, probably the best comedy of our time.
And so other... many bold statements coming out.
Yeah, I should tell the listener I'm full of crazy statements. But that one's not crazy, that's just facts. Like, I mean, the other one, though, is I rewatched The Rules of Attraction recently. I think the Brett Easton is the one that he wrote and Roger Avery directed. James Van Der Beek, yeah, like real throwback to the 90s, whatever. You know, I think it's recent 2002, but it's really it's doing some bold things.
Yeah,
so like stylistically, right, yeah. It's quite cool. You know, it's not amazing. If you look on What Tomorrow Is, it's 43%. Yeah. So like, say that's on Netflix and someone wants to watch it and they go by Rotten Tomatoes, they'll just discard that immediately. So
I guess here's like an aspect that we haven't really thought about, like the whole concept of damning with faint praise, which. How it applies to Rotten Tomatoes is often that it's like manufactured faint praise, because the review might say, and I've definitely felt this about a lot of films, like, I really enjoyed watching this film, I really enjoyed the idea of it and what it was trying to do.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it made a lot of mistakes along the way, but, you know, so I'm going to give it 3 stars.
Yeah.
But that, my review is not saying, meh.
No.
Take like the Neon Demon, the Nicholas Vinnie Refn film. I'm glad I watched that and I would recommend people to watch it and it's interesting, but I would have... You know, I'd give it like something around that area just because it has some faults.
Sure.
But when you amount all, if all of those people have come from it from that perspective and you aggregate their thoughts as it's 3 out of 5, you end up with this like yellow box that just says it's all right. It's and that's not actually what people were saying. So it does seem like the way they aggregate reviews is kind of doesn't necessarily reflect what people are actually saying.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't think it's helped by so many publications competing to have their reviews shared online. There seems to be more of a push for 5-star reviews. This is an amazing headline. 1-star review. This is the worst film that's ever existed. Just because people will share that more or click on that more. And I think that culture is probably what's egging on something like Rotten Tomatoes. Because I know people try not to do it, and we try not to do it, but sometimes you'll see just a tiny quote in the review, and you'll be like, that's the headline. That's this really wide thing. I know someone's going to go on Twitter and post that and be like, oh my God, and share this around. And I think that's become a real temptation, and that's probably part of the issue as well. That kind of feeds into this.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. And actually, it's like a microcosm of a much larger point that, it happens like everywhere on the internet. You know, you see with like political discourse, it's everything is like, this is this act they're trying to pass is the worst thing, or this speech someone made is the best thing or the worst thing. And it happens to film criticism too. And it is a worry, isn't it, that happens, that everyone's kind of driven to bin something or like say it's incredible.
Yeah. Mm. Which I guess in terms of Rotten Tomatoes, we were saying this earlier, Chris, about, like, if it's a film that is good and deserves praise and it's not getting it, optimizes and helping its cause, that really sucks. But if it is a film like Pirates of the Caribbean 20, and if Rotten Tomatoes is going to kind of maybe help compiling the negative reviews and in the help of drowning that franchise out, then that is a good thing in one way.
Yeah.
But I think that's what's happened to The Mummy, because that hasn't done big at the box office.
No.
Because it has been badly reviewed and it is a terrible film.
Mm.
So that's probably a good sign of it.
You were offended by that film.
I hated that film. I thought it was so terrible.
Yeah, whatever we can do to kill off the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise and The Mummy one before it even starts again, that's God's work. And I put my heart to that for sure.
Definitely.
It's funny, you said the Paramount's president of worldwide distribution, Megan Culligan, she said... She didn't say she's not like anti-criticism or anti-Rotten Tomatoes, but said it's not word of mouth around the movies anymore. It's word of mouth around the reviews. And that is a worry that I guess, you know, and we're guilty of this, you create so much talk about the film that people won't say, oh, I've heard it's bad. It's just like, oh, it got terrible reviews. That's kind of interesting as well. But
that's quite worrying, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, what do you think the conclusion to all this is? So in that... internal report that like Fox commissioned to try and work out what the hell was going on, it said one of the recommendations was consider not giving the critics a chance to slam you. And they said, well, it's never a great feeling to withhold from critics. Now it may help to at least preserve your Friday. So this idea that, you know, they might have less previews, which we do see, don't we? At the moment, it only happens for the kind of very, they know it's ridiculous. Like, I think Fantastic Four, right? They didn't do them. They're like, we've got a stinker here. Let's just not give it to the critics. But if they start to do that for bigger films, which I could definitely see them doing, that is quite worrying.
Yeah, it is worrying. And they did it with Wonder Woman to an extent, because they, I mean, I went to the cinema with my girlfriend. We just bought tickets, and there were no pre-screenings for that film at all. Like, no one was able to see it. A couple of reviews came out, but it was quite difficult for, you know, they didn't do a mass multimedia like they normally do. Even though it was a good film, and they were obviously worried that people react to it in the same way they did to Suicide Squad and Batman v Superman. And that immediately made me worried about the film, having not seen it and kind of being, oh no, they're not showing anyone else. Mm. Then they did it for King Arthur as well. They didn't show anyone. And you immediately go, oh, warning bells. And if there isn't that criticism beforehand, if people aren't able to go to their favourite critics and see a review, and then I don't think people will spend that money. I think people are going to stop. People will not order tickets beforehand. Mm. But I mean, this is an issue.
I don't like make this claim, or I don't want to say anything that you know I'm going to be held to task for. But I do think that it's a film reviews are really only necessary when it's for the little films that need a boost.
Yeah,
I really do think that. I think, to be honest, a review of Wonder Woman or of the latest Marvel film, you know, it has its audience. People, for the most part, who are going to see it will see it, regardless of what the review says. So let's say, for example, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 got 1 star, 2 stars everywhere. People were still going to go and see that film. Wonder Woman obviously got great reviews, and I do think in that case it's probably done better because of it. So obviously, what I'm saying doesn't really, it's not, you can't really say it across the board.
Yeah.
But I do think that ultimately, critics, you know, one day maybe if there was a limit on the films that critics reviewed and outlets were more likely to go and see this little independent film and review that. Don't bother with 4, 8, because, you know, people are going to go see that. That might be quite nice one day. Yeah. I don't know.
It's quite ironic how the one person complaining is the guy who did Batman v Superman, who made, you know, 800, 900 million anyway, despite having that score. Like, it should be an...
Well, did he reckon he'd, like, have made more money? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely. He probably... I mean, they were hoping for $1 billion, probably.
Yeah.
And because they made a bad film, they didn't get that. But it's not... It's just not the critics' fault that you made a bad film.
I think, well, if they do start not doing advanced screens, I think they'll disguise it as well. They obviously won't come and say that's why. I think what they'll do is, like, so... A bit of background, when we review TV, we get... advanced screeners most of the time, but with Game of Thrones they don't, partly because they don't need to, because everyone's going to write about it anyway.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes you get advanced screeners because they're trying to boost your interest in the show to see if you want to write about it.
Yeah.
But also with Game of Thrones they do it because they're worried about leaks, and I could imagine them starting to, that bleeding into film where they're going, you know, we've got this huge film coming, this huge DC film, and it's just going to drop on this day, and you're not going to get to see it first because we're worried about it leaking, or like it's just going to come out of nowhere. And I feel like they could use that as a way to disguise getting out there without having go past critics first.
For sure. It'd be a shame to almost kind of strip away the excitement of the build-up of that particular film. So say, for example, they were like one day, like, Christopher Nolan is dropping a new film on this day. We're not going to tell you what it is, what it's like. There would be an excitement around it, but the novelty would wear off the next time it happened. But I just want to kind of be excited for whatever this film is.
You feel a bit hoodwinked, didn't you?
Yeah.
That's what they kind of did for 10 Cloverfield Lane.
They did that, but it kind of worked for that.
I think it worked for that franchise. But now, I mean, they're announcing superhero films into 2021 at the moment, so
there's a reversal as well.
Yeah. I guess the salient point here that you were saying, Jacob, is that I guess the most positive thing we can do is just shine a light on, use reviews to shine a light on the things we think are worth it. I always think of, like, distilling our job down to, here's some cool shit. That's how I like to think about it. And I think that's noble, just like trying to make people interested in something that you think someone's made and they've done a really good job with.
Yeah.
So I think that's the best way to...
And I guess in some ways also warning people off the really bad films as well, like the ones that you've been really offended by. I mean, because I personally feel like I don't write negative reviews half as much as I do positive reviews.
Same,
Which is because we just got a lot of love to give, I think. Yeah. Really? we just got a lot of love to give, you know? Yeah, no, but I think that's, I agree with what you say. But then every now and then throw in a, do not see this awful independent film.
So yeah, Rotten Tomatoes, maybe tighten up your critics listing a little bit and also maybe get a redesign. I feel like a Splat Tomato is very 90s by this point.
Very 90s. Splat Tomato is very 90s.
All right, Jacob, Jack, thanks for...
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Kernels episode 10. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Let us know your thoughts on that debate and any others or any others you'd like to see us cover. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Kernels. And yeah, subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes if you get a chance. All right, bye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.